want to stay in the same situation, then continue doing what you're doing.
You guys can get on board and go down this four-lane highway and just rock it out, and you don't have to have a decade of learning process.
Meet people where they are. If you want to have all types of clients, be a Rubik's Cube. Meet them where they want to be met.
We have to know our numbers. We have to know how much we want, and then how many deals do I have to close to make that a reality?
What I want to do over the next half hour or so is give you clarity on the items that really are going to generate money for you and allow you to do the things you want to do.
If you're not currently being coached by the people in the industry that are doing it at the highest level, then you're working too hard to get there.
This is the Next Level Loan Officers Podcast with Kenneth Travis and Sean Zamenhof.
Hello, everybody. Sean Zamenhof here with the Next Level Loan Officers Podcast, and we are joined by a special guest today, Derek Fertig. Derek, how are you?
I'm good, brother. How are you?
Good, good. Sunny Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Hey, so today we are going to really kind of talk about two evolutions, and Derek has an amazing business that he's ran, that he runs, but his story is really even quite more remarkable than that. So just to kind of frame things, Derek, I want you to talk about your numbers, where you were, where you are, where you're going, because all of that's impressive. And then I kind of want to go back to the beginning again and just talk about the man that you really become through your experiences. And I mean, I'll just say it for everybody, how much better of a person you are right now than you were a few years ago. And so take the floor, bro. Where did you start? When did you get in the business? What were those numbers? And how did that evolution of business grow? You can make that quick, because the best thing about you and the best thing about this story is really just the man you are right now.
Sure. I got into the business in 2005. First business I was in, I was in the broker world. And at that point, that was pre, Dodd-Frank. So we didn't really measure volume. We all got paid on fees. I think everybody was the same. So yeah. Honestly, like up until 2009, really, I have no idea what volume I was doing, just the fees, because that's what everybody really cared about. But in 2010, it was kind of like a personal breakout year for me. I moved on from the guy that mentored me in the business for the first 5 years of my career. And I went to work for a company, and there was a couple of guys that worked there that were on Scotsman's Guide. And so I made it, like, I obsessed over in 2010 making Scotsman's Guide. So I just worked and hustled and hustled, and you know, we'll get into that, but I burnt probably quite a few people's bridges through the course of doing that. And in 2010, I think I did like $60 million or $65 million. It's just kind of like a one-man band. And then evolved onto a branch manager, and my branch was doing like $60 million, $65 million. I regressed from a production standpoint and was producing, just not producing at that level, because I got totally burnt out just doing that all myself. I had no idea how to build a team per se that year, so was working crazy, crazy hours. And hovered around like the $60-65 million range. And then kind of like a blessing in disguise that I partnered up with my good buddy, Justin Miller, who we run the branch together now. And he was doing similar numbers. So we were about $120 million in 2016. And last year we did $187 million, and this year we're at $160 million year to date. We're on track to do about $350 million this year.
Very impressive. So very interesting conversation that you mentioned a point and became a branch manager and your business regressed.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing the number of loan officers that I talk to, and then I'm sure that you talk to in the industry. And man, they want the title. They want to be a branch manager, and they don't have any idea how good they have it as a loan officer. I mean,
yeah, you know, it's interesting. You hear sometimes, we kind of chuckle about it, but when you hear somebody use the term just a loan officer, that's like self-demoralizing. Loan officers are the lifeblood of the business. I mean, that's the best position sometimes to be. A lot of times a branch manager is, people think that a branch manager is the yellow brick road to millions of dollars, and it could not be further from the truth. You have an entirely different set of responsibilities. You have to learn how to actually run a mortgage business, whether you be in the broker world, whether you be in the retail world, whatever the case may be. You're responsible for a lot more than just creating, I'm being loose when I say this, but creating your own schedule. You know, if you're a loan officer, and unless you're working for somebody that mandates that you have certain office hours, we don't, your entrepreneurial spirit can take over and you can do as many loans or as little loans as you want.
With close to zero overhead.
And really not a lot of risk. You're not paying salaries. You don't have obligations to other people other than yourself and to your family. And I think that in this day and age, you know, the loan officer of today is more like a Swiss Army knife because it looks like so many different things from company to company or business to business.
This reminds me of that saying. I don't remember who coined it first, but be careful what you ask for.
Yeah, for sure.
I've seen so many people have, you know, a great LO. Hasn't made doing 10 or 15 loans a month. For anybody listening, I mean, you probably want to get there if you're not already. I mean, multiply that times your comp, times your average loan size and how much money you're bringing in. And then they want to go get an office and hire their own processors and have their loan partners and everyone on staff. And then they want to run a P&L. And then, you know, all of a sudden, things change a lot. You know, our staff and in my office, you know, we're set up to do 140 loans a month. Well, in January, in February, December, we don't do close to that.
Yeah.
And I'm still paying a staff that can do 140 loans a month. And people just don't really understand what is entailed in making that operate on an efficient basis. But you do, bro. And that's awesome, man. Almost, you know, from 170 million to 350 million in production, you guys are doing some things right. And I think that really changed a lot in the person that you've become. I heard your story. So I wanted you on here when I heard you speak. Like, go back to that 2010-ish mark when the obsession with hitting the Scotsman's Guide, who you were, how you treated people, and who you are today.
I was an asshole. There's really no other way to put it, you know, but the thing is that like, I didn't know any better. You know, I learned so many good things from, the man that mentored me in the business. You know, 2005, you know, I was 24 years old and, you know, I was very entrepreneurial at that time, but I was just like this rough around the edge kind of, you know, I think what you would define as like a hustler. I could sell anything, but I didn't know how to sell. I didn't know the technique. I didn't, you know to ask the right questions, et cetera.
And I, role approach.
I learned so many good things, but I also learned so many bad things. I learned how to demoralize people, how to manipulate people, how to ostracize people to get what it is that I wanted, not realizing that there was, you know, if I really wanted to get to the point that I wanted to be, kind of where I'm at now, you know, I wasn't going to get here doing what it is that I was doing. And I really, really had to learn the hard way. You know, I'm a new parent. And I know that there's going to be a time, my daughter's 7 months old, and I just remember growing up, I thought I knew everything. My mom and dad, as we probably all did, you know, but my mom would tell me I was incorrect or try and set me straight. My dad would do the same thing. And it's just one of those things where it's like, you don't know what you're talking about. I know what I'm doing, blah, 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 blah. It's the same old story. It was the same thing in business. You know, I felt like what I was doing, probably the reason I felt that way, if I'm looking back in hindsight, is it was like instant gratification. You know what I mean? In our business, then more so than now, my first month in the business, I made like 21,000 bucks, like my first month. So going from a salary, I moved down to South Florida from like the DC area. I was working in the Pentagon for the Office of the Secretary of Defense. I was a network architect. So 2 months before I made $21,000, I made 6,000 bucks on a salary and I was working my ass off. And then I came down and I worked as equally as hard and I made almost quadruple that. And I was like, wow, okay, I've discovered fire. Now let's pour gas on it. Whatever it is that I did to create those results, I'm going to do it so much harder, and I'm going to go so much harder at it, and I'm just going to never let up. I'm going to never let up. I'm going to never let up. And I think that I just rubbed so many people the wrong way on my way up this ascension, you know? And
what were you doing? How were you treating people at that point when,
you know, I think it was, I think I still have some bad habits, man. You know, I catch myself, you know, it's communication skills or interpersonal skills where you can say things where it gets received a completely different way. Like for example, like if a loan was supposed to be submitted in our world, we have deadlines or what we want to be kind of like service level standards. So if, you know, a loan comes into processing, we like for it to be submitted within 48 hours. Well, we're slammed right now. They can't meet the 48 hour deadline. We're at like 72 hours because, you know, our processors have 60, 70 loans apiece. They just can't get through them all as quickly as they once could. So rather than hitting them up and saying like, hey, you know, do you think that this might, we might be able to get this tossed into underwriting today, I still find myself sometimes being like, this was supposed to be submitted yesterday. Why wasn't this done? And it gets received a completely different way. You still wrestle with it. I've still got the sandpaper out trying to polish away those bad habits. So it's things like that. You know, I would automatically finger point rather than try and be a good teammate. I would automatically assign blame. You know, it's, I think a lot of people know what a DISC profile is. I think a lot of good loan officers and a lot of good salespeople are off the chart D and off the chart I. I'm no different. So we're drivers, you know, we really like to be in control and in command. But along with that, unfortunately, sometimes comes a dump truck full of ego, and we never, ever want to be wrong. So we're always, when something goes awry, very rarely do we have the humility to step up to the plate and fall on the sword and say, you know what, that's my bad. Instead, you're assigning blame to somebody else. And I think, you know, the 25-year-old me or the 26-year-old me, you know, I was like Doc Holliday, just boom, 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 assigning blame anywhere that I could possibly put it. And who really wants to work with somebody like that?
Derek, I'm 41. How old are you?
38.
38. So just a couple of years. Our journey is very similar in that manner. So I had, up until my early 30s, like I was so focused on the end goal. And for, you know, some, we've all had the way that we grew up. I grew up in a really moderate middle-class neighborhood, but I was like the poor kid in the neighborhood. My parents just bought the house at the right time.
Me
and
too.
So they, everybody had more money. They could play the club hockey sports. They could go on the spring break trips. And it just wasn't something that was available to me. And it made me aware of money at a, like basically since I can remember, but I remember being 5 or 6 years old and understanding the difference in people who could do what they wanted to and people who couldn't. And it made my drive and focus on that dollar early in my career, at the expense of other things.
Yeah.
And I realized at some point, so, you know, obviously next level, our main thing is coaching loan officers and helping loan officers. But the, what I realized, I was probably 32 or 33 years old, that I realized how stressed I was. And the thing is the only way that I actually realized how stressed I was is I started learning some better systems. I started implementing some things for true growth in myself and in the business. And all of a sudden I look back and I wasn't all that stressed anymore. And until you're not stressed, you don't really realize how stressed you were, because you learn to live at a threshold that is unhealthy, not only for you, but for everybody else around you. And the way that we treat people and everything just reflects from that. And, you know, I plowed over people. I was damn good at getting loans closed. Still am, but I do it in a different manner these days.
And likewise, I think what you just said resonates a lot with me, because I was the same way. You know, my parents got divorced at a very early age, so each one of them were kind of like single income households for a while. And you know, when I I was like 9, I think. And I moved with my mom to Pittsburgh. And, you know, Pittsburgh then is not what it is now. And there was just not a lot of opportunity. There was nobody there. I mean, I'm sure there was people, you know, in every city that just kill it. But in my sphere, I was like the bottom of the totem pole. We didn't have any extra money for anything. You know what I mean? Like, I was really big into sports. It was a stretch. I remember when I was like 11 or 12, to get a YMCA membership was like $75 a year. And I had to beg my mom to get this, and $75 in 2000. I mean, that was that must have been 89 or 90. It was a lot of money back then, you know. And she had to just like, she's like, okay, I'll make it happen. And she literally worked to get me that. And so I saw like, okay, I associated with, it's not that we can't have these things. You need to work to have these things. And the things that I wanted, for whatever reason, I was attracted to, you know, more of those materialistic things because my friends had some of them. Oh, it's, you know, I'll never forget Penny Hardaway was like my favorite basketball player growing up. And he came out with his first shoe. His shoes were like $90. And I remember telling my mom I wanted these shoes and she just started laughing. She's like, $90 for one pair of shoes? That's crazy. And I obsessed over these things. And so she was like, you want them so bad, you earn money and you go buy them. And I was like, okay. That's all you needed to tell me. So I went door knocking around the neighborhood, washing people's cars, cutting people's grass, anything that I could do. I mean, I sold baseball cards. We had a membership to like Sam's Club. I used to go to Sam's, buy like the big box of combos, and then sell individual packs of combos out of my locker in middle school for like triple what the individual price was. So, I mean, then I was like making $1.50 a day selling snacks.
But at least you can't go to jail for selling that out of your locker.
No. But this is such a long time ago, but it's like, okay, I learned very early that you can get these things. You just have to work for them. And sometimes that takes some sacrifice. And I wasn't going to be able to have the same benefits that everybody else was. And I was really, really envious sometimes of my friends at an early age, I remember, because their parents could just give these things to them. And they didn't really value them because it was just expected. Their parents had the means and it was like, okay, here's something for nothing. And being 10 years old or 12 years old, you don't have the emotional intelligence to sit back and look at that and be like, you know what's going to happen? Johnny over here, when he gets to 20, isn't going to understand what it takes to grind and get what it is that he wants in life. When one door shuts, you can just go create another because he's so used to being spoon-fed. And that became so, I guess you could say, obvious to me as I got older, where none of my friends, quote unquote friends that I grew up with, well, majority of them weren't really doing anything. They weren't, because they didn't know how. Yeah. They didn't know how to go out and work hard. They were just used to being given things. So it was just, I'm actually, in hindsight, I was bitter, but now I'm so grateful that was the way that it was, because it just set the bar at that age where it's like, all right, you can get these things, but I can't give them to you. So you're going to have to go and work for them. And I think hearing your story is very similar. You get focused on the money side of it, and it can be good, but it can also be bad.
I was good, man. I was mowing lawns. I was doing everything. I mean, I may have fibbed about my age so I could get a job at a restaurant early so I could be a busboy and get tips because I knew that made the most money. And I will never let my kids at 15 and 16-year-old work in a restaurant with a bunch of 19 and 20-year-old people. Not fortunately, I ended up just okay, but lots of influences that I don't wish on anybody. And man, it's, we both have had a special gift too. Like, first of all, living that, like, it's made me value things that my boys will never understand. But Derek, my kids are 3 and 5 right now. So, I mean, it must've been a couple months apart from an age when you had your first and we had our first. And that's something, you know, that we struggle with sometimes because it's just so easy. And like, they break a toy and my 5-year-old just like, I'll buy another one. I'm like, you know, yeah. But it's that value that we have to sculpt and build them into. But the other thing is, man, I am so glad that, you know, the 37-year-old Sean had the first kid and not the 30-year-old Sean, because I was able to do, I don't have a lot of wants. I mean, when I'm going to bed at 9 o'clock on a Friday night, like, I've had a lot of fun on a lot of Friday nights. I'm not missing going out to a bars or going to a party or any of those things, because I want to wake up at 5 or 6 the next morning with my kids. And yep. It was really fortunate how my life played out and having kids and later in life, just to be able to be there for them in a different way right now. And it even goes into my mornings. Like my kids are finishing up summer school right now. And I get to work a little after 8:30 every day, cause that's when their school starts. And I could easily be here at 7:30. I mean, you know, I'm up at 4 and I hit the gym pretty dang early in the morning, but I get to play with them for a couple hours every morning. And like, I just know when I look back on my life that I'm never going to be like, damn, I wish I got to the office a little earlier when they were young.
Yeah. This being a new dad, it's relevant. It's hitting a soft spot for me, because right before we got on, I'm texting back and forth with my wife, and it's just, you know, there's no such thing as perfect. And when you're not a parent, you have the liberties of just being able to do, for all intents and purposes, whatever you want, whenever you want, because you don't really have any obligations. You can pick up and go away for a weekend. You want to go on date nights as often as you want. It's great. And then your baby comes out and everything changes in an instant. It's just your whole world's completely different. And you know what I'm talking about. So I'm not telling you anything that you don't know. You have 2 kids. I have 1.
Wait till the second one comes, man. It changes again.
I'm having to really take a deep look at myself. And it's tough, because it's like, I feel like we're doing the right things. And I know that I'm such a different person than what I was, you know, 5 years ago, 6 years ago. And I feel myself having to change yet again. And you get in your uncomfortable zone because you're making sacrifices that, you know, I wouldn't say it's a sacrifice. You're making a trade-off. You have to balance your time differently. I mean, is spending time with my daughter a sacrifice? No way. But it's reprioritizing what used to be paramount, which is like building this business, you know? And now it's like, now I have this little girl at home that I walk in the door and she's not walking yet, but she's in her pack and play and she's standing up for the first time and she sees me come home and she smiles. And it's just a level of, it's nothing can take that away. And then you think, you're like, oh gosh, I need to go home. And it goes from needing to go home to wanting to go home, because I want to be with my family. I want to be with my wife. And it's this balance, man. It's just like a constant like tug of war or tug of rope where trying to find that, it's so cliche to say, but that work-life balance, like how do I give 100% while I'm here? You know, it's 11:30 here in Florida. I've been here since 8:45. I've been up since 6 a.m. you know, playing with her, changing her, getting her ready for the day. And it's like, how do I get every ounce of juice that I possibly can while I'm here? And I'm exhausted when I leave here, and then go home and then give more, you know what I mean? And then it's tough. I think that every new father or every parent or mother goes through that. And it's just like, you know, I want to be a good leader and I want to set a good expectation here and be a good role model here, for be a good teammate to all my teammates here. And I think also sometimes guilt sets in. I don't want people to think that like I'm not working hard. You know what I mean? And I think personally I wrestle with that. Like sometimes I'm like, man, I don't want to leave because I don't want to make it look like I'm not here or I'm not available for my team. And you know, we wrestle with that, man. It's struggling with that a little bit current situation.
Man, you know, so I have a few suggestions that I've built on over the last 5 years with having a child, because it definitely changed the amount of hours that I put in. And I mean, number one, like I used to think I had to be at the office before everyone and stay later than everyone else.
Ditto.
That's not true. I didn't used to work near as efficiently as I do. I get more done in my 8 hours at work than most people get done in 2 days right now. And the other thing is that just the way that you lead and the way that you're leading right now and then that I lead here, man, I am just making sure that my people are happy and taken care of. And you know what? Like I'm a cooler guy when I'm working 8 hours a day here at the office. And I put in some time after the kids go to bed, you know, a few days a week, because I've got my mortgage business. We've got Next Level Loan Officers. There's a lot of things that I have going on. Yeah. And I know there's a lot of people that say, you know, and coaches out there that will tell you, hey, man, if you're working more than, you know, 32 hours a week, you know, you're an idiot or you shouldn't be doing that, man. That's just not the case. Like, we got to hustle and you got to grind. And if those two things, those aren't bad words. I mean, those make us the people they are, that we are, and helps us really set the example. Right. But I've laid out those systems to be so efficient at work most of the time. Still get distracted. And really, like, it doesn't change how it is for anybody. I mean, people know, don't email me if you need to get a hold of me. Text me. So somebody needs me at 6 o'clock at night, more times than not, like if it's one of my loan officers, I'm right there for you. I can answer that in a few seconds. And it just changes the way that we really set it up to be there for them. And on top of it, man, 7 months old. So you're probably helping your wife out and getting up once or twice a night now. Or is your baby sleeping all the way through the night yet?
She's starting to now. So we're last night she slept pretty much all through the night. But you know, that's the other thing. It's like my wife actually works with us, so she's on our team too. So I feel like it's an advantage, because unfortunately, sometimes a lot of our conversations revolve around work. You know, when I'm home, but it's really tough for me to like hit the off button. You know, it's like my mind, just the way that I'm wired, I'm just constantly thinking about everybody else. I'm thinking about the business. I'm thinking about our team, you know, trying to do things that, you know, I remember things that would rub me the wrong way when I wish somebody would lead me the way that I want to lead now. Recognize the smaller things. You know, I try to personally reach out to people on their birthdays, or, you know, they have a great month. I don't just send some canned email. I send a really nice text message and let them know how proud of them I am. And it's just, I personally feel like you can't do that if, like, whenever you leave, you're like, okay, I'm done. I'm done now. But the entrepreneur in you will not allow you to do that. No. And, you know, it's like sometimes that's tough, because that's a gift. It's a gift, but it can sometimes also be a curse. You know, the gift is it's gotten us where we're at, helped us create a life for ourselves and our families, and sometimes the people around us. You know, like you said something just a minute ago, and it kind of dawned on me. One thing that I used to do is I used to just like work for myself. The end result was me. What was good for me? What was good for my pocket? What was good for my bank account? How many personal accolades could I stack up? Could I post on social media that I did this? You know, that I accomplished this. And now I just like, I don't care. Like personal stuff, like the personal accolade, I just don't care. Like it just doesn't mean anything to me anymore. It's like, I want, how many people can I send out good messages about? Like, these people had personal records last month. These people's lives were changed. At the end of the day, are they in a better place now than when we found them, or when our paths crossed? You know, are we able to leave people in a better place than where we found them? And that's more like what I get the most gratification out now is, you know, dude on the team hits me up and is like, man, I'm looking at my pipeline and I just can't believe this. This is a dream come true. There's no amount of volume that I could personally close that would give me that. Like, it sounds sappy, but it's like, I almost want to cry, because it's like what we're doing is it's so, I don't know what the word is. It's just so, that's the gratification. You know what I mean? If that's a love language, that would be one of those love languages, to where you're just so happy for the people that you're around. And then it just makes you want to do even more. Speaking on my behalf, it's like, what can I do now? Okay, we got you here. That's awesome. What else can I do for you? Is there anything else that we could do to increase your quality of life? Is there anything else that we could do to help you take your business? Is there anything that we can do to support you? And then it's just crazy, man. It's like, you know, we have our Christmas parties and we have wives and spouses coming up and they're like, man, this person's just a different person and they're just so happy. And then again, it's like, okay, bucket list item, check. You know how powerful it is to have a spouse come up to you and say, this person is a completely different person And I hate when people say work for you, but I don't look at it that way. We work together. We're a team. Nobody works, you know, for me. I hate like, oh, this is, I'm this person's boss. I'm, you know, this, that puts me in the mindset up here of like, that's the old me. You know what I mean? We're more colleagues. We're more teammates. So what is it that we can accomplish together? I just happen to be in this position of leadership. And I think that was something that was kind of a game changer for me.
And that's awesome. I correct people all the time. If anybody says I work for you, I'm always like, you work with me. You don't work for
yep.
me. And that's just, they know that, like they'll say for, and they'll be like, I'm sorry with. And I couldn't really think of a better way to wrap this up, man. That's having somebody's wife or husband come up to you and saying, you've changed our family's life. You've changed my wife's life. You've changed my husband's life. And that's why we do this. And it's kind of why we do Next Level Loan Officers. We are here to make the loan officer community better. If you do not have our app on your phone yet, everybody pull out your phone right now and type the word Next Level, one word, to 36260. Get our app downloaded. You'll have this podcast and many others that you can download and listen to directly on there, as well as our next live events coming up. And we look forward to seeing you there, Derek. Thank you very much for being our guest today.
Dude, thanks for having me on. It was a good time.